All right, hey everyone, welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we're going to jump into something I think a lot of you, especially those of you in law school or even just thinking about it, will find pretty interesting and relevant. You know, those waivers, those seemingly endless waivers that we sign for like everything these days, you know what I mean? Especially at the gym.
Yeah, absolutely. And especially thinking about maybe down the line, if you're arguing a personal injury case, waivers are going to be really important.
Absolutely. So today we're diving deep, no pun intended, into a 2015 California case.
Grebing v. 24 Hour Fitness USA, Inc.
Yep. And it might sound a bit dry, you know, a gym injury case, but stick with us because this one's packed with some really key insights into how liability waivers actually work in practice, the surprisingly high bar that exists for proving gross negligence, and the often confusing area of product liability, especially when you have a service provider in the mix.
Yeah, it's a lot more nuanced than you might think at first glance.
Absolutely. And so for this deep dive, we've got all our bases covered. We've got the actual court opinion itself, of course. We've got a standard case brief that kind of neatly breaks down all the elements and even some guidance that's been specifically put together, thinking about this in a podcast format, to make sure we hit all the angles that are really important for all of you listening.
Yeah, so we can make this as useful as possible for you.
Exactly. Yeah. Our mission today is to basically extract, you know, the most crucial legal lessons that we can from Grebing, so you can walk away with a really clear, practical understanding. Oh. So let's jump right in. Let's start with, you know, the story itself, the background of the case, and some of those key facts that kind of set the stage.
Sounds good. So the plaintiff in this case, Timothy Grebing, was a member at, you guessed it, 24 Hour Fitness.
Makes sense.
And his injury actually didn't happen on a treadmill or while lifting weights or anything like that. It happened on a low row machine. And it's important that we emphasize it was a low row machine, not a standard rowing machine, because the mechanics are a little different.
Gotcha. Yeah, good distinction.
So while he's using this low row machine, a clip that's designed to hold the handlebar in place snaps.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And the handlebar flies up and hits him in the head.
Ouch.
And this resulted in injuries to Grebing's neck, head, and back.
So pretty significant injuries then.
Yeah, definitely. And like most of us when we join a gym, Grebing had signed a membership agreement. And this is where it gets interesting legally, right? Buried in that agreement, and you'll see this in a lot of contracts, was a liability waiver.
Right, designed to protect 24-hour fitness from being held responsible for any injuries.
Exactly. And they were pretty thorough with the language in this waiver. It specifically said they wouldn't be liable for injuries resulting from, get this, their own negligence and even defects in their equipment.
Okay, so they were really trying to cover all their bases then. Do you know exactly what the waiver said?
Yeah, the court documents actually quote the key part. It said 24-hour will not be liable for any injury resulting from any negligence, including equipment defects. Pretty broad, right?
Wow. Yeah. So clearly they put a lot of thought into crafting this waiver.
For sure. And, you know, as a future lawyer, pay attention to how specifically they listed negligence and equipment defects. That's key in making these waivers enforceable.
Right. Good point. So it seems like they were being very intentional with their wording.
Absolutely. But, you know, as with a lot of legal cases, there's more to the story than just this agreement.
Right. Because obviously, a waiver doesn't automatically mean a company can just completely disregard safety.
Exactly. And that's where some other details of this case come in that make things a lot more complicated.
Okay, so what else do we need to know?
Well, first of all, Grebing had actually read a safety warning label that was on the low row machine before he started using it.
Okay, so he was aware of the potential risks involved.
Right. Now, here's where the timeline gets really interesting. About 20 minutes before Grebing got hurt, another member had actually reported to the gym staff that the clip on that same low row machine looked, quote, crooked.
Oh, so they had some kind of prior notice that there might be a problem with the machine.
Exactly. And despite this report, they didn't immediately do anything like inspect the machine or take it out of service or anything.
So there are reasons some questions about their response, right?
For sure. But, you know, to their credit, 24-Hour Fitness did present testimony from their employees about how they handle equipment maintenance. They said they do daily inspections of all their equipment.
Okay, so they have some kind of system in place.
Right. And they claimed that, generally speaking, they only have equipment issues, you know, like actual failures or breakages, maybe once or twice a year.
So they're saying it's pretty rare.
Yeah, that was their argument. But obviously, Grebing still felt like they were responsible for his injuries, so he decided to sue. And he actually made several different legal arguments. He started with a basic negligence claim, saying they failed to properly maintain the equipment.
Right. Makes sense.
He also went after them with negligent products liability and strict products liability, basically saying the machine was defective and they should be held responsible for that defect somehow.
Okay, so he was really trying to hit them from multiple angles.
Yeah. And then he added in a breach of the implied warranty of merchantability, basically arguing that the machine wasn't fit for its intended purpose, you know, that it wasn't safe to use normally.
Right, because the implied warranty of merchantability basically means that the product should do what it's supposed to do.
Exactly. So you can see how he was trying to build a strong case against them.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
So we've got the background, we've got the facts. Now let's get to the good stuff. You know, for those of you studying law, let's dive into the legal meat of this. So first and foremost, that liability waiver, how did that play out? I mean, was it even enforceable?
Yeah, that's the big question, right? So the general rule in California, and this is true in a lot of places, is that waivers like this, if they're written clearly and they're unambiguous, are usually enforceable when it comes to claims of ordinary negligence.
Ordinary negligence. Okay.
All right. And this even applies to things that are considered inherent risks of using a gym, like equipment malfunctioning. You know, you're kind of assuming that risk when you go to a gym. But the key phrase here, and this is important for everyone to remember, is clear and unambiguous. The court in Grebbing found that the waiver in his membership agreement did meet that standard. They pointed out that it specifically mentioned negligence by the gym.
Okay, so they were very clear about that.
Yeah. And, crucially, it also included coverage for injuries caused by defects in the equipment. Remember that part we talked about earlier?
Yeah, I remember. So it seems like 24-Hour Fitness really did their homework when they drafted this thing.
Definitely. It's a good example of how being specific and comprehensive with the language can really make a difference.
Absolutely. And it's a great lesson for any of you who might end up drafting contracts or advising clients on them. You know, the more detailed and specific you can be, the better.
For sure. And, you know, to really drive this point home, the lawyers for 24-Hour Fitness also made a point of highlighting that the gym didn't actually make the low-row machine.
Right. So they were trying to distance themselves from any potential product liability issues.
Exactly. Their argument was essentially, we provide the space and the equipment, but we're not the ones who designed or manufactured it. So if there was a defect from the get-go, they were saying, hey, that's not our fault.
Smart strategy, for sure.
Yeah. It's all about limiting their potential liability, which makes sense from their perspective.
Makes perfect sense. Okay, so the waiver shielded them from ordinary negligence claims, but what about gross negligence? Because I know there are some situations where even a rock-solid waiver won't hold up.
You're absolutely right. And that's exactly what Grebbing tried to argue. So in California, a waiver can't protect you if your actions are considered gross negligence.
Right. So what did the court have to say about that?
Well, they had some pretty strong words about what qualifies as gross negligence. They defined it as an extreme departure from the ordinary standard of care. Or another way they put it was a want of even scant care.
Okay. So that's not just like being a little bit careless. That sounds pretty serious.
Yeah, it's a much higher standard than regular negligence. It's more like being reckless, you know, totally disregarding the safety of others.
So given that definition, why did the court decide that 24-Hour Fitness didn't meet that standard?
Well, they had a few reasons. First of all, they pointed to the fact that 24-Hour Fitness had those daily inspection procedures in place, which shows some level of care.
Okay, so they weren't just completely ignoring safety protocols.
Right. And then they considered the testimony from the gym employees who said that equipment problems were pretty rare and that they usually took care of them quickly.
Right, right.
But of course, the big thing here was that other members report about the crooked clip just 20 minutes before Gribbing's injury.
Yeah, that seems pretty damning.
You think so? Right. But the court actually said that while the delay in responding to that report might have been ordinary negligence, it didn't show the kind of extreme departure from the standard of care that you need to prove gross negligence.
So basically, they messed up, but it wasn't bad enough to be considered gross negligence.
Exactly. It's an important distinction. Ordinary negligence is about not doing what a reasonable person would do. Gross negligence is about being way beyond that, like being totally reckless and indifferent to people's safety.
Gotcha. So in the court's eyes, even if the wrong clip had been used on the machine, which maybe contributed to the whole thing, that would probably just be regular negligence, not gross negligence.
Right. And the court even made a point of saying that. It shows that they were really focused on 24-Hour Fitness's overall behavior, not just this one mistake.
Interesting. So they had the waiver to protect them from ordinary negligence, and Grubin couldn't prove gross negligence. What about his argument about strict product liability? You know, him saying 24-hour fitness should be held responsible for the machine being defective.
Right. He tried to argue that the gym was part of the chain of distribution for the machine, so they should be strictly liable. But the court shut that down pretty quickly.
How come?
Well, they basically said that 24-hour fitness is in the business of providing services, not selling equipment. They lease or buy the machines, but they're not involved in making them or selling them to the public.
Right. They're basically just the end user, like they're members.
Exactly. So the court didn't think it was fair to apply strict product liability rules to them in this situation. Those rules are usually meant for companies that are directly involved in putting a product out into the world, you know, manufacturers, distributors, retailers.
Makes sense. So the court basically drew a line between companies that are making and selling products and companies that are just using those products as part of their services.
Exactly. They weren't willing to blur those lines in this case.
Okay, so after all that back and forth, what was the final outcome?
Well, both the trial court and the appeals court ruled in favor of 24-hour fitness. The appeals court upheld the trial court's decision to dismiss Gribbing's case, basically saying he didn't have enough evidence to support his claims.
So 24-hour fitness won, and the case was dismissed. And what are some of the big takeaways from this case, especially for those of you out there who are studying law?
Well, first of all, it shows how important it is to have a well-written liability waiver. You know, if you're representing a client who's in a business like this, anything that involves some level of risk, you want to make sure they have a solid waiver in place.
Right. It's like their first line of defense.
Exactly. And Grubing is a good example of how the language of the waiver can really make a difference. It needs to be clear, specific, and cover as many foreseeable risks as possible.
Makes sense. And this case also really drives home just how tough it is to prove gross negligence.
Oh, yeah. It's not just about showing that someone made a mistake. You have to show that they were acting recklessly with a total disregard for people's safety. And that can be hard to do.
Especially when a company like 24-Hour Fitness has established procedures and can point to the fact that they usually handle these things properly.
Right. Having those procedures in place definitely worked in their favor in this case.
And then there's the whole product liability angle. Grubing shows that those rules aren't usually going to apply to companies that are just using a product as part of their services, unless they're also involved in the manufacturing or distribution process.
Exactly. It's a good illustration of the limits of product liability law.
Absolutely. So to sum it all up, Grubing the 24-hour fitness teaches us that liability waivers, when done right, can be a powerful tool. Proving gross negligence is no easy feat, and product liability is usually focused on the companies that are actually making and selling products, not just the ones using them.
Right. And, you know, this case brings up a lot of interesting questions about how these principles might apply as technology keeps changing things. Like, think about all the new fitness equipment that's connected to the internet and uses software.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Where does the line between service and product get drawn then? Like, what if a software glitch in a fancy exercise bike causes an injury? Could you argue that the gym is liable for that, even if they didn't make the software?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's like, is it a product defect or a service failure?
Exactly. Or, you know, going back to Grubing, what if 24-Hour Fitness had known about a bunch of similar incidents with that low-row machine model at other locations, but they didn't do anything about it?
Right, like if they ignored a pattern of problems.
Exactly. Would that have changed the court's thinking on gross negligence? These are the kinds of questions that this case makes you think about, you know, how the law has to adapt to new situations and technologies.
Absolutely. It's a great example of how a seemingly simple gym injury case can actually raise some really complex legal issues.
Yeah, and it shows how important it is for lawyers to stay on top of these changes and be able to think critically about how the law applies in different contexts.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
Yeah.
Well, that brings us to the end of our deep dive into Grubing v. 24-Hour Fitness. Hopefully you all found this helpful and maybe even a little bit thought-provoking.
Definitely.
And as always, we appreciate you joining us here on the Deep Dive. We'll be back soon with another fascinating case to explore.
See you next time.